Donald Trump doing a rally near Milwaukee a couple days after race riots. What could go wrong? I wonder if the Fox News sheriff will be there. On the live line with us, a big fan of the Fox News sheriff, criminal defense attorney Casey Hoff. Casey, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Sly.
Isn't that David Clark inspiring?
Oh, wonderful. Always very measured. Never trying to inflate anything, never trying to stir up racial tension. That's what I like.
That's the David Clark we all love. Okay, so let me just, let's see if I have the story here. Naturally, I don't. I thought I brought the audio in, but I guess I didn't. Brendan Dassey. Tell us about Brendan Dassey. And tell us about what happened with Brendan Dassey.
Well, what happened is that his conviction was overturned. That's the punchline with this whole thing, on a federal habeas petition. And basically what that means is that it's sort of a last-ditch effort in the federal courts. The only way that you can raise it is if there's some sort of federal constitutional right that's been implicated. And in this case, an involuntary confession. An involuntary confession in this case that is deemed to be unreliable by this federal court judge. All of Brendan Dassey's state appellate court methods, as I understand it, have been exhausted. And so this was sort of his last-ditch effort. And what happened was, I believe the figure is something like 99% of habeas petitions are denied. But this one was granted, and the conviction was overturned. And so now the state, as of, I believe it was last Friday, has 90 days to decide whether to appeal or not. And if they do appeal, it'll go to the Seventh Circuit. And what happened in this case was the judge again said this was essentially the interrogation was so coercive and so unreliable in the way that it's been done. And anybody who watched the Making a Murder documentary knows what I'm talking about. I mean, these two trained interrogators are interrogating this 16-year-old, I believe he was 16 at the time, kid with a relatively low IQ who had never really been involved in the criminal justice system. Asking him leading questions, and it's not unusual to ask leading questions. That's allowed, generally. But what they did is they were basically putting ideas into his head, and he was essentially agreeing with anything that they said. And so people who watched this interrogation went, you know, this was no matter what they thought about Stephen Avery, the majority of people that I spoke with anyway had a real, real problem with this 16-year-old kid's conviction.
So what would happen in this case if the state were to appeal this? It would go to the Seventh Circuit, then the Seventh Circuit would make a decision. If there were a new trial, would that interrogation be admissible?
It should not be admissible, because it was involuntary. Now, there are separate sovereigns when it comes to the federal system and the state.
Oh, Jesus, separate sovereigns.
However, it should not come in because it was so unreliable. I mean, Sly, in Wisconsin, we've recognized the involuntary confessions and the way that that whole thing works, because the science is clear that people do confess to crimes that they do not otherwise commit. One of the things that was talked about in this particular case was the officers using what we call the Reed interrogation technique, which is a technique that essentially breaks down somebody's will so many times that they ultimately will say just about anything you want. Now, does it work with everybody? No. But is it going to work most likely with a 16-year-old kid with a low IQ who's never been involved in the criminal justice system, who was talking about how he wanted to just get back to school? How they were making promises to him and saying that if he just, you know, essentially other versions of the truth will set you free. That's what the judge even talked about. Now, they used variation of that phrase. But they essentially were making promises to him that were never going to come true.
So he was about as capable in that interrogation as Dan Quayle was during his vice presidential debate.
There you go. That's a great analogy.
All right. Like. Now, you've given your opinion on this. There is another opinion, and I think you may recognize the voice when you hear it.
Unleashed lawyers David Bruno and Troy Slayton also joining us. The actual prosecutor in this case, Ken Kratz, now the author of Avery, the case against Stephen Avery and what Making a Murderer gets wrong. It's available for pre-order on Amazon right now. Okay, David Bruno.
Yes, Nancy.
Don't just echo what your buddy Troy Slayton says. I want you to tell me. You're a well-respected lawyer.
Absolutely.
I want you to tell me. What was wrong with that interrogation? Because I say nothing was wrong with
it. I hate to break it to you and Ken, but this is not a new rule of law. Statements have to be voluntary. And now, what's changed here is that we now get to see videos of how police conduct themselves in providing Miranda and various other promises and pressures when they have defendants in custody. And it was here.
I'm still asking the same question. What was wrong with those questions? And you still haven't answered. Do you have an answer?
It's the overall. It's the totality of the circumstances. It's the intellect. It is the promises.
He's 16
it's how
years
old.
Wait. He's 16 years old. He was repeatedly told he had a right to have a lawyer. His mother is waiting in the next room. She was asked to come in. She chose not to come in. His lawyer knows he's there and sent a representative from the law firm there. And he was repeatedly told he had a right to remain silent and he could have a lawyer with him. He also is not mentally ill. His IQ is in the average range. So why do you keep saying that?
You know, Nancy, he doesn't have to be mentally ill. He doesn't have to be beaten. The issue of voluntariness goes far beyond just those factors. It's a totality of the circumstance. And I've always been very critical. I've been very critical of this documentary.
Ken Kratz,
All right. So I know that you have every bit the respect for Nancy Grace as you do for David Clark.
Oh, why do you have to play that for me? It's just so nauseating. I mean, this she is so wrong on so many levels. If you look at the actual,
but she has a TV show.
Yes, I'm aware of that. So I'm very aware. Very good. Very good TV show. So she's sitting here. She's talking. Everything that she says is contrary to the scientific research. She is acting like they have to beat you. That they have to do something. I mean, this kid was in the room by himself. That's the bottom line. He was being interrogated in a very aggressive manner. And by aggressive, it doesn't have to be mean. It doesn't have to be yelling. We're not talking about that. We're talking about psychological pressures. Pretty much, you know, the two interrogators, they lied to Dassey. They said that they knew pretty much everything already. They didn't. They said, we'll stand by you no matter what you did. They wouldn't. They said, honesty is the only thing that will set you free. Well, they knew at this point there was no way that they were going to set him free. And the proof is in the pudding. He's not free. He's been in jail for, I think, 9 years now, and would be serving a much longer sentence had the judge not done the right thing in this particular case.
What is the accusation of his culpability in this murder?
Well, essentially what they have is his statement.
Were there some sort of accusations of some sort of sexual pedophilia or isn't there an allegation that something happened?
There was an allegation that there was a sexual assault that occurred in the bedroom. But again, this was the product of a very, I can't do it justice over the, you have to watch this interrogation.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable. When you sit there and you watch it, you realize this is a young kid who is susceptible to any pressure. He does not, with all due respect to him, he does not appear to be bright, and he's not bright. He's sitting there, he's being interrogated by these two very trained interrogators. They're making him all kinds of false promises, telling him essentially that he's going to be free if he just says what happened. So he essentially says everything that happened, by the way, much of which was contradicted by the actual evidence. So we know that he was talking about things that didn't even happen. We know, the judge outlines this in his decision. We know how wrong this interrogation was and why it was wrong, and it just proves exactly what we know about social science research and the pressures that can be given in by somebody. He is confessing to this rape slowly and slowly and slowly. The judge in his decision, by the way, and this is an extremely rare decision, he said that the investigators repeatedly claimed to already know what happened and assured Dassey that he had nothing to worry about. These repeated false promises, when considered in conjunction with all the relevant factors, most especially Dassey's age, intellectual deficits, and the absence of a supporting adult rendered Gatsby's confession involuntary under the Fifth and Fourteenth Amendments. It doesn't matter if there was an adult in another room. The adult wasn't in the room with him. He had an IQ of 76. I mean, this was so wrong on so many levels. And I'm so glad that the justice system actually was exposed to this. I mean, this guy's been sitting in prison now for 9 years. I don't know whether he's factually innocent or not. But did he get a fair shake in this situation? No way.
All right, stand by.
Given this interrogation.
Well, so what you're saying is you respectfully disagree with Nancy Grace.
I disrespectfully disagree with
her. On the live line with us, we're talking a little bit about the Brendan Dassey case. Of course, it'll be interesting to see whether the state appeals this. They have 90 days to appeal this. If they don't appeal this, then Brendan Dassey is free, correct?
He is. He's released if they don't appeal within 90 days.
You think they're going to appeal, though, don't you?
I do, yeah. I mean, I think the political pressure on this one, where there shouldn't be any, but there is, especially given the documentary on Stephen Avery, is enough motivation for them to appeal, and I think they will.
I want you to hear now, this is Ken Kratz, who was also on the Nancy Grace program. He's now a defense attorney up in Superior, but he, of course, was the prosecutor in this case.
Reality of the circumstances is a legal phrase, but it does not apply to whether somebody gets Miranda or not. So, Ken, can you answer the question and respond to Bruno?
Sure. The totality of the circumstances is the standard for voluntariness. However, totality of the circumstances, Nancy, is put together with all of those circumstances that we talked about. And when the magistrate in this case admitted that there was no promises that were made, in fact the officer said, I can't make any promises to you, when they absolutely did not make any threats, when they told Brendan Dassey that we want you to tell the truth, telling the truth or imploring somebody to tell the truth is not the same as making promises or making inducements or threatening them. These are things that happen every day across this country when they take statements from people, and absolutely is not rendering this statement involuntary.
Your thoughts on his comments?
Well, I mean, he's just wrong. If you take each statement, I suppose, in isolation, you can make the argument that he's making. But when you take those statements in their totality, as the, I believe the other attorney in the previous clip had talked about, they're absolutely involuntary. Pretty much everything you've said already, we know that's a lie. We'll stand behind you no matter what you did. That's a lie. Honesty is the only thing that will set you free. That's a lie. Because what they wanted to hear, whether it was the truth or not, was not going to leave him free. Again, I don't know whether he did it. He may have done it. But when you're making all of these false promises to someone who, by the way, thinks that he's going to go back to high school later on in the day, who clearly doesn't know the seriousness of what he's about to do, who's sitting there in his baggy jeans and they're imposing their will upon him. We do need some standards, and we need to enforce those standards as far as interrogations, because what we're going to be left with, Sly, are all kinds of convictions, which, by the way, have already happened, false convictions. We know, because we know that there have been convictions that have been overturned by DNA evidence proving that a different person committed the offense when, in fact, the person that was wrongfully convicted falsely confessed. So we've got this idea in our head that every time you have a false conviction, it's got to be, you know, there's got to be a lampshade swinging, and somebody's got to be hit with a rubber hose. But so, that's not the way that it is.
Well, those were some of my favorite interrogations on NYPD Blue with Sipowicz. Now, those were some illegal. Yes, sure. Those were some illegal interrogations.
Yes.
The state's appeal. What are they most likely to appeal this on?
Well, they're going to say that this was a voluntary confession. It's probably going to be something along the lines of what Ken Kratz just said. They're going to say that, you know, this judge did not apply the law correctly to the facts. When you're dealing with totality of the circumstances, like, this is not an objective standard, right? We don't have It's not like calling balls and strikes.
Balls and strikes. I knew you were going to bring that one out.
Well, it's not. It's subjective. Like a lot of stuff is in the law, we talk about a reasonable person standard. We talk about unreasonableness. We talk about totality of the circumstances. None of this is balls and strikes. It's not a calculator approach. We look at the totality of the circumstances. In other words, you look at the interview and you say, look, this, no matter how bad the accused crime is, or in this case, the guy who got convicted of this crime, no matter how bad it is, we want to make sure that when we are convicting somebody, that we're doing so fairly and we're doing so on reliable evidence. Because for most people, the worst thing that you can possibly imagine is a false conviction and sitting in prison for a crime that you did not commit. And we know it happens. And it happens with more regularity than we like might to admit. Now, is it happening in the majority of cases? No. But is it happening in a lot of cases? It is. And it's extremely disturbing. And had it not been for the advent of DNA evidence, we wouldn't even know about all of this stuff. And there is no doubt that we would have more people that would have been executed for crimes they did not commit.
Do you think the Netflix series, Making of a Murderer, had something to do with this decision from this magistrate federal judge?
Well, it shouldn't. And I hope
that wasn't my question, Counselor.
Okay. Do I think that it did?
Uh-huh.
I don't. I think that as far as the public consciousness of the Stephen Avery case, it obviously had a huge impact. But do I think that this judge was sitting there? He may have watched it. I don't know. And basing his decision in part on public sentiment? No, I don't. Because if you read the 91-page decision from this judge, it's like it's like the book on false confessions. The citations in there to the record, I mean, these are factual things that actually happened. And so, no, I mean, I think, did he watch it? I don't know. Did it influence him in this decision? I don't think so, because he's got as far as I can tell, he's got a rock-solid decision.
Finally, this does not affect Stephen Avery. Is Stephen Avery out of appeals? And has Stephen Avery sought help from a federal judge?
Well, he's, I believe, in the process of doing that right now with his new attorney. So he's not, as far as I understand it, he is not out. And this decision, while it doesn't have a direct effect on Stephen Avery because this confession was not used in Stephen Avery's trial. In fact, Ken Kratz said, I forget if it was publicly in a press conference or if it was on the record, but he talked about how essentially he believed Stephen Avery was the only person responsible for this. So it wasn't used in Stephen Avery's trial, but do I think it could have a ripple effect? Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of motivation behind this, and I think it could potentially uncover new evidence. Again, regardless of whether Stephen Avery did or didn't do the crime, I don't know, but I do think it could have an impact.
Now, before I let you go, did you want me to play some more audio from Nancy Grace?
Oh, please. Please, no, don't do that. Please spare me.
Sounds good. Casey Hoff, thanks for coming on the show today. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right.
Slysoffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.